rise, the Court of Appeals Division 1 is now in session.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. We are here for oral argument in our case number 1CASA26-0132, Northern Arizona Healthcare Corporation versus Bickham. As a reminder, the proceedings are being video recorded and live streamed. They will be uploaded. The recording will be uploaded to the court's YouTube channel in the next day or two. Counsel, when you begin, please identify yourself and your client. Each side will have 20 minutes. The appellant may reserve time for rebuttal, but you are responsible for keeping track of your own time. We have read the briefs and conferenced the case. And with that, counsel, you may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. Kelly Jankitis for Northern Arizona Healthcare. Today we're here asking the court to protect the confidentiality of data that was collected after a fall event in the hospital parking lot. I'm using the word data intentionally here. We deferred to the plaintiff's use of the term incident report in the trial court, but what we're actually talking about here is a printout of a log like you might get at the DMV on a printer whose paper has like holes on the side that includes some narrative information, but is primarily data fields, true and false questions regarding categorization of the event.
Is this information in the record?
This is, yes, in the record in the sense that this is all described as what was input in there.
Okay, where is that described? The declaration of Ms. Dolan's appeared to be rather conclusory.
Sure. I mean, what she talks about in her declaration is that this was all input into the remote data entry system. So I'm just clarifying to the court that this is not an incident report that was filled out on a document that says incident report. And that's what the employee testified to, is that she input this information into the remote data entry program.
So what you're describing we'll find in the pages of the deposition transcript that we've been provided.
I mean, it's supported by the deposition transcript and the information that Ms. Dolan submitted.
Okay. What I'd like to know, is it in the record before us, or are you going outside the record to share this information with us?
The way that I'm describing it is not specifically the way that it was described below, but I think that it's important for the court to understand what we're talking about here.
I've just never heard that it was answers to yes or no questions, that it was mostly data fields like that. That surprises me because I haven't seen that in the record, and I think that we're just wanting to make sure that because that raises a different picture in my mind of what it looks like than the picture I have from the record.
Well, that's what is contemplated by the reporting policy that is included in the record as well, is that this is a living document that people add to as they review it and ask questions and follow up on what occurred and what information is collected for reporting to the patient safety organization, so that these types of events can be tracked. So I agree that that this wasn't super clear below, but that is what this case is about. This data is protected in two ways. It's protected under the federal law for the Patient Safety Quality Improvement Act and under the state statutes that are in Title 36. Both of these exist to promote a culture of safety and quality improvement, and both provide broad protections from disclosure to patient safety.
The federal statute only applies to information that's created specifically for that purpose, correct? Purposes related to the federal statute, reporting to a patient safety organization, that sort of thing.
The federal statute applies if the data is reported in a patient safety evaluation system and then reported to the patient safety organization. The federal statute doesn't preclude that information from being used for other purposes.
So it doesn't require that it be solely for that use?
That's correct. There's nothing in PSCLA that says that it is required to be solely for that purpose, and the 11th Circuit has specifically rejected a sole purpose requirement.
Well, but it says, on the number two, that one of the prongs is that developed by a patient safety organization for the purpose of improving patient safety, healthcare quality. So you're saying that because it says for the purpose of, it would have had to say solely for the purpose of, and that we can read into it that it was for that purpose and another purpose and therefore doesn't?
Well, the statute says it needs to be created for the purpose of basically quality assurance activities.
Right.
It doesn't say it has to be created for the purpose of reporting to the PSO or solely for the purpose of reporting to the PSO. This information was put into the PSES for the purpose of quality assurance activities. There's no information in the record that suggests otherwise, and that's apparent when you look at the actual policies.
A patient safety evaluation system is defined as the collection, management, or analysis of information for reporting to or by a patient safety organization. So the patient safety organization is part of the analysis to determine if there is a patient safety evaluation system.
I agree that the patient safety evaluation system exists for that purpose.
Okay. It sounded to me like you were saying that there are two separate, distinct, unrelated ways that something could be considered patient safety work product or whatever the term is. And one is the patient safety organization and one is the patient safety evaluation system, but the latter exists in connection with the former. True?
Yes. I mean, there are two ways that you can have patient safety work product, one under the federal law and one under the state statute. The PSQA states that you have to report that data into the PSES and then subsequently send it over to the PSO. But it's created in the PSES for the purpose of conducting quality assurance activities. I assume you're going to follow up with me if you're,
go ahead.
If it's not making any sense. This information was submitted solely for quality assurance purposes. The plaintiff tries to make a distinction based on the John C. Lincoln case because, according to them, this report wasn't necessarily for quality assurance purposes. But unlike the policy that was in John C. Lincoln, the Northern Arizona policies only require reporting in the PSES when patient safety is at issue. There's a whole list of things that need to be reported that are required to be reported in the PSES, and they're all related to patient safety. And when patient safety is implicated, there's always a quality of care concern. And then according to the charts, which this is on page 56 of the appendix, no matter what occurs, there's always a harm level classification assigned. And there's always a referral to the Just Culture decision tree. And then, if you look at those charts, which is on page 59 and 60, regardless of what harm classification is assigned, and regardless of which path you follow on the Just Culture decision tree, you always get to some kind of analysis of the root cause of the incident, accountability, whether barriers exist, whether trends can be identified, whether there are system failures or successes, and these are all quality assurance activities. Every single time, no matter where you are on this chart, and no matter where you go on this chart, the end result is always that there is some kind of quality assurance analysis.
John C. Lincoln says raw factual information is not protected. So wouldn't at least the technician's account of what happened be excluded from the protection based on the John C. Lincoln case?
Well, the problem with John C. Lincoln and how it doesn't align with this case is that the report itself that contained raw factual information wasn't created for quality assurance purposes and wasn't reported into a PSES. In that case, the policy required a whole bunch, like anything unusual that occurred at the hospital, whether it affected patient safety or not, was to be reported. And then someone looked at it and was like, oh, should we do some quality assurance related to this? And then it was routed into a quality assurance process. So in those circumstances, The raw factual information is referring to that report and whether or not that report gets sucked into quality assurance or not. It's not quality assurance information until it is used for quality assurance purposes. And during the period that it's not quality assurance information is where it loses any type of protection by confidentiality.
Ms. Jankaitis, did you have a question?
Well, I was changing subjects a little bit, so if you're on this.
Yeah, let me just ask a question on Northern Arizona's system, MIDAS. So I understand. There's no incident report or no report written up under Northern Arizona's policies. It first goes into MIDAS. Is that right? And then if the hospital feels like there needs to be something pulled out for a report, at that point the hospital decides what's going to go into the incident report. Am I understanding the process?
If there's an external reporting requirement, then a separate report is made outside of the PSCS.
So everything goes into the PSCS?
If it's a patient safety issue, then the policy says, yes, you report that data into the PSCS.
So everything that goes into the PSCS is privileged?
Everything that goes into the PSCS is privileged unless there's an external reporting requirement, and then it's pulled out, or it's required to be pulled out, and there's no confidentiality attached.
So does that apply to the Glassberg report, since there's a requirement to maintain incident reports?
There is not a requirement to maintain incident reports anywhere in any sort of authority that's been cited. There is some administrative codes that are identified that require NIH to maintain a quality management system.
Maintain a system, and whether you put anything in the system or not is entirely up to you. As long as you have the bookcase, you don't have to put any books in it.
Well, it does impose some record-keeping requirements, but it doesn't impose any reporting requirements.
I just, just the narrative that doesn't look good just to the average person is that there's an incident where someone's injured at the hospital before they're still on hospital grounds. There's an incident that an employee of the hospital is involved in, and there doesn't have to be any, there's no requirement that get put in her medical record, even though it's a potentially medical incident that happened on the hospital campus. There is not going to be an independent report that would be discoverable about the facts that happened in that case. And then there's an assertion that everything related to whoever saw that incident or was involved in it, you have to wait for their deposition in order to find out what they think. That's the narrative that's the worst for you, that it's intentional that someone who is injured at the hospital is not going to be getting any kind of firsthand account of what happened until they litigate and then do a deposition of someone 3 years later about what happened. And so what should we take from that, that it's not black like that, that this is legitimate, it's not to prevent anyone from getting this information, this is just the way it's done? Just help me with that narrative.
Sure. The alternative is that there's no report made at all. And if there's no report made at all, there's no requirement for reporting at all, then the plaintiff is in the exact same place that they are now, where they don't know what happened other than their own version of events until they file litigation and take depositions. The problem with that alternative is that
the only alternative, that's the alternative, is that if there's no reporting requirement in federal or state statute, that a hospital system like yours is not going to want to keep account of what the people on the ground saw when they had an incident that is potentially something they're going to be sued for 2 years from now, that they would not want to get any of that for their own protection. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. So that's what I'm asking you to help explain.
Sure, and there's a lot of tangents here. The first one is that the policy does say that that factual information should be entered into a medical record. The problem in this case is that this occurred in the parking lot. It wasn't during a time that this patient had been discharged. So it wasn't in the scope of a time where there'd be a medical record. Our tech went back in and reported to various medical providers that this happened. And and it wasn't put into a medical record. If it was, that absolutely would be discoverable. Another part of that is that the hospital can make a policy where they require separate reporting for risk management purposes. For if we get sued, then we want to know X, Y, and Z. There's no indication that that happened here either. And then the alternative, or what these statutes exist to serve the purpose of, is to encourage reporting of incidents and to make that confidential so that people will report it without worrying about whether they're going to get sued and whether they're saying truthful information.
But isn't the purpose of confidentiality to help on a broad scale, patient safety on a broad scale, not specifically this incident?
Yes, and the data that Ms. Glassberg input in is her narrative of what occurred is so that the hospital can mine that for the information it needs to determine whether this was a system failure, whether this was a quality of care issue, whether there's a concern about the quality of medical care that was provided, or whether people are being trained adequately. So the report is not intended, when it's put in the PSES, to document what happened for future litigation. It's put in there so that risk management can pull out what it needs to fill out the patient safety organization report or whatever it submits, so that those aspects of what occurred can be documented and tracked and trends can be found.
So there is a narrative from her in that, because you started out this whole thing about that it's yes or no questions and there's, you know.
I did say that there's some brief narrative in there.
Okay.
Is there room for this panel to treat, or for the court, the trial court, to treat the Glassberg report and the additional materials differently from one another?
I think that the additional materials are absolutely protected. Those are 100% quality assurance review materials.
And we know that because it's in the Dolan's declaration.
Sure.
So she's deciding that.
Well, she is the witness with the information to provide that to the court under oath.
Why wouldn't, and people are always truthful, right? No, I'm just being facetious. But why wouldn't an in-camera review be appropriate?
There's no reason in this record to conduct an in-camera review just because the plaintiff doesn't believe the only evidence that's in the record.
Say that again.
There's no reason to conduct an in-camera review just because the plaintiff doesn't believe the undisputed sworn evidence that's in the record. There's no reason to believe that this information that Ms. Glassberg reported was used for any other purpose than what the hospital has represented that it was for.
Are we talking about the additional materials or the Glassberg report?
All of it.
So you're saying that to allow an in-camera review is just encouraging plaintiffs to go on fishing expeditions?
Essentially. I mean, we wouldn't object to an in-camera review if that's what the court wants to do, obviously. I just don't think that it's been justified in this record. And you asked whether or not we could treat the materials, the report, and the additional materials separately. And I think that you can, but you shouldn't, because that information was reported in the PSES for quality assurance purposes. That's what the policy says. You submit it so we can do all these things, and all of these things are quality assurance reasons. I'll save the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Your Honors, Zubin Couture on behalf of the respondent plaintiff, Matthew Shane Bickham. At issue here is whether the purely factual incident report that was submitted hours after Mr. Bickham's fall and related materials such as notes taken during risk management's interview of Ms. Glassberg protected as privilege pursuant to the Patient Safety Quality Improvement Act of 2005, or the PSQIA, as I like to call it, and Arizona's quality assurance statutes. And, you know, I briefly like to address what Ms. Jankaitis had mentioned in her opening, that, you know, this incident report is actually a printout log that's filled with yes or no questions, that it's data field, it's a living document, but that's not in the underlying record. All that was at issue and all that I had ever requested and all that Ms. Glassberg had ever testified to was that she filled out an incident report, and then thereafter filling out an incident report the same day of the fall, it was then she then had an interview with risk management where she relayed what happened during the fall, and risk management took notes of that fall. And so I think this argument now about all of these additional things about what's contained in this system, I think those arguments are waived because it was never presented on the Superior Court record.
Mr. Couture, what did Ms. Glassberg say in her deposition about what she put in the report?
I had asked her, she didn't recall exactly what she put. She couldn't recall the incident, but when I asked her, was this a purely factual report, she did say it only included facts about what occurred. So
the notes that were taken by the people that interviewed Ms. Glassberg, though, presumably those notes reflect their own thoughts, their own impressions, their own analyses of what she was saying, not simply a verbatim transcript of what she was saying. So why wouldn't those be covered by the peer review statutes?
Well, I don't think, I think first, Your Honor, that the peer review statute is not at issue here. It's really the quality assurance statute. And there's been no evidence that meeting and interview, that was pursuant to a quality assurance proceeding or quality assurance activities. There's been no evidence that's been presented in the underlying record by NIH. And it's their burden to kind of make that showing. I'd like to address, you know, whether the incident report and related materials are protected pursuant to the PSQIA. And I think the issue comes down to whether the incident report and related materials fall within the exception of what's defined as patient safety work product. And the relevant exceptions here are the original provider records exception, and also the exception related to information collected, maintained, or developed separately from a patient safety evaluation system. And I think, the historical context of the PSQIA matters here. Since it was enacted, there's been a great deal of debate about, you know, what is patient safety work product and what meets the exception to patient safety work product. And one of the issues that were coming up was that the statute was being used as a way to deprive injured patients of getting records that they were able to obtain prior to the statute's enactment. So HHS in 2016 issued guidance kind of clarifying the intent of the statute and also provided clarity on how the exceptions to patient safety work product should be interpreted. And what that guidance said was that information that was required to be submitted as part of an external reporting or record-keeping requirement, and that could be state regulations, or it could also be voluntary reporting activities, such as hospital policies. Those types of external record-keeping or reporting obligations, they cannot be patient safety work product. It also clarified that under the original provider record exception, records required to meet federal or state law were not patient safety work product, even if they're kept within a patient safety evaluation system. And so after this guidance was issued, several federal courts and state courts have held that incident reports, such as the one at issue here, are not patient safety work product. And if we look at the incident report and related materials here.
Is it the case that the federal statute, the federal privilege, applies only to information that was created and maintained solely for the PSQIA purposes?
I would say that it is, Your Honor. I know Ms. Jankaitis has cited to In re BayCare, the 11th Circuit's decision, but there was a district court in California that applied that sole purpose test. And then there was also a North Carolina Court of Appeals case that I cited to that actually rejected In re BayCare, saying that this was it wasn't persuasive or binding because it related to a third definition of patient safety work product that was not at issue there, nor is it at issue here. So when we look at the incident report and related materials at issue, and we look at them in conjunction with Arizona's hospital regulations and also NIH's own patient safety policy, I think it's evident that the incident report and related materials meet the exception to the definition of patient safety work product and is not patient safety work product. And there's no dispute here that Arizona's hospital regulations require policies covering quality management, including incident reports.
Well, apparently there is a dispute about whether incident reports are required to be maintained by Arizona regulations.
Right, but there's no dispute that that the regulations require a quality management system requiring a process or policies to document, evaluate incidents.
But their point is they have that, and that they're not, that you're encompassing, you're reading into that regulation a requirement that doesn't exist.
Well, I think counsel said that there is no reporting obligation, but she did say that there is a record-keeping obligation, and that's what the I'm talking about here. And even despite the dispute over whether there is a reporting or record-keeping obligation, the hospital's own patient safety policy was created to comply with the regulations. And this is an important admission, especially in light of the Supreme Court of Kentucky's decision in Kitchen. And I'd like to briefly address that case because I think it's analogous to the situation here. In that case, the Supreme Court of Kentucky found that an incident report related to a fall that was filled out a few hours after the fall was not patient safety work product. And similar to Arizona's hospital regulations, Kentucky state regulations required hospitals to create an effective procedure for tracking incidents. All it required was an effective procedure for tracking incidents. There was no reporting duty there, but and as analogous to the situation here, the incident report in Kitchen was created to a hospital policy, and that hospital policy was created pursuant to the state regulations that required the effective procedure to track incidents. And so the Supreme Court of Kentucky found that the incident report was created as part of an external record-keeping obligation and found it was not patient safety work product as a result. And so NIH has not cited to a single case that found an incident report was patient safety work product, and I think that's telling. It did cite to Inri Baycare, that 11th Circuit decision about whether there's a sole purpose test or not. But I don't think that's relevant to the issue here because what the 11th Circuit emphasized was that not all documents submitted in BayCare, that was the hospital there, not all documents submitted in BayCare's patient safety evaluation system were privileged. And that counters what counsel's argument was initially. If she was saying that all documents put into a patient safety evaluation system are privileged. But according to the one case that she cites to, that's not true. Rather, the 11th Circuit found that the question becomes whether any disputed documents actually fit within the exception to the definition of patient safety work product. So even if the incident report here was stored in a patient safety evaluation system, it was submitted to a patient safety organization or a PSO, if the incident report meets one of the exceptions to the definition of patient safety work product, then it's not patient safety work product. And I'd also like to discuss the Eastern District, Pennsylvania decision in McNamara, where the court there found that documents related to a mortality review were not protected as patient safety work product. And notably, it found that the party that was resisting production had done nothing more than recite the elements of the statute via affidavit, which was insufficient. Especially when the court found that the mortality reviews were required by contract, which it found was an external record-keeping obligation. And so here, the Dolan's declaration that was referenced in the motion for protective order, which is really the only evidence that they have for support, that is just a bare recitation of the statute. And that cannot be used to defeat NIH's own admission that the patient safety policy was enacted to comply with Arizona's hospital regulations. And the incident report at issue was the exact report that was required to be filled out pursuant to that patient safety policy. When it comes to the related materials, whether those are patient safety work product, I think the answer is also no. And I think the reason is a little bit simpler in that the underlying, there's no evidence in that Dolan's declaration. If you look at the Dolan's declaration, it only references a report. There's no reference to any additional materials or related materials that they are patient safety work product, that they were created in a patient safety evaluation system, or that they were prepared for or actually reported to a patient safety organization.
Well, I think the declaration kind of lumps the Glassberg report and the additional materials together under one heading as the report. Isn't that a fair reading of it?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think if you look at the affidavit, it specifically references the incident report and then thereafter only references the report.
So you're saying that the that NEH has waived the argument with regard to the additional materials?
I do. I don't think there's ever been anything in the actual underlying Superior Court record. And if you look at the motion for protective order that they filed, there was nothing in there that they even described as related materials in the motion either.
But the trial court didn't find waiver, and the trial court included a brief description of what the additional materials are. The trial court wrote in the order denying the motion for protective order, their subsequent reported statements provided to risk management, related note. Anyway, so the trial court seemed to know what the additional materials were and didn't find waiver. So how can we find waiver for the first time on appeal?
Well, I think they knew about what the related materials were because I brought that as part of my response to the motion for protective order. And while they didn't explicitly find waiver, they did find that it was not patient safety work product, and they did find that it was not protected by the quality assurance statutes. And so, you know, I believe that the court has to base its de novo review on the record that was presented to the Superior Court, and NIH has failed to show that the incident report and related materials were patient safety work product. If the court doesn't have any other questions on this issue, I'd like to move to the issue of whether the incident report and related materials are protected by Arizona's quality assurance statutes. Again, the answer is no. ARS 36-2401 through 2403 protects quality assurance information as confidential. And the statutes define quality assurance information as information submitted to, presented for, or considered by a healthcare entity for or in the course of quality assurance activities. And then it defines quality assurance activities as activities or proceedings of a healthcare entity established to reduce mortality and for improving the quality of healthcare through the review of qualifications, practices, training, patient care, et cetera, of licensed healthcare providers. And that's important because here the conduct at issue is not the conduct of a licensed healthcare provider. It's the conduct of an unlicensed technician who is Kelsey Glassberg. And so it's my position that, you know, the quality assurance statute, as was argued in the to the Superior Court, it's not even applicable. But even if it is, I believe it fits within the otherwise discoverable exception of 36-2403E, which states that information that is otherwise discoverable does not become confidential based on its submission to or consideration by a healthcare entity conducting confidential quality assurance activities. But when you look at the second sentence of 2403E, the intent is to protect the deliberative process of the quality assurance activities. It's not, the intent is not to protect purely factual information about how an incident occurred that was submitted hours after a fall. And so I think, you know, we look at Humana and we look at John C. Lincoln, that all supports a finding that the incident report and related materials are not protected. I think counsel stated that the incident report at issue was not prepared for quality assurance in John C. Lincoln. But if you look at the case, the incident report was titled Quality Assurance Program Incident Report. I don't think it gets any clearer than that about what the purpose of the incident report was. But even so, despite that, the court found that just because it contained purely raw factual information and it was not prepared solely for the purposes of peer review, it was not protected as privileged. And the court in Johnson.
It's not just that the information includes purely factual information. It's that the raw factual information is not privileged, but the conclusions and analysis of that information is. So, I mean, we can't just say that because raw factual information is included, therefore it's outside the privilege, right? We have to look more closely than that.
I think that's not at issue here because what Ms. Glassberg testified is that the incident report that she submitted was purely factual information. And so when we're looking only at this incident report, that's at issue.
Okay, you're talking only about the Glassberg report then, not the additional materials.
Well, from My understanding of what's been presented through deposition testimony, those related materials, those specifically those notes, were purely factual. There hasn't been any information from NIH about whether they were or what they weren't. To the extent the Superior Court needs to do an in-camera review of those materials to understand whether they're purely factual, I think they should.
So your argument, though, is you're only entitled to purely factual information. That's all you're asking for.
Well, I think purely factual information related to the fall, yes.
Do you have an opinion about whether we should treat those to the GLASA report, the additional materials, if we were to order in-camera review? Do you have an opinion, a counter-opinion, as to whether those should be treated differently, the same, and why?
I think the incident report should not be subject to in-camera review. Everything that's been presented is that the incident report was purely factual information.
That was not disputed below.
That was not disputed below.
And that was based on Ms. Glassberg's deposition.
That was based on Ms. Glassberg's deposition testimony. And I think if we look at NIH's own patient safety policy, it supports the idea that this is not the incident report and related materials are not quality assurance activities. The third page of the patient safety policy, that's the Bates labeled APP 55, the procedure section for serious safety and risk event response states that organizational standard response to patient safety events is outlined below. And then on the next page, page 4 of that policy, it lists the step-by-step chart that was referenced in the response. And that chart shows that NIH's own procedure is to document accurate information, and then only later, after several other steps are taken, does it determine whether a risk event review is needed to perform a root cause analysis, a peer review, or other quality assurance process. And that sequence shows that the Glassberg report was the antecedent factual event report, not the later deliberative analysis that would be protected as quality assurance activities. And again, there's been no evidence that the incident report originated as a peer review committee decision, a root cause analysis, or other deliberative quality assurance process. That was NIH's burden to prove, and they failed to do that in the underlying record.
Will you repeat something you said earlier? You were talking about quality assurance statute in Arizona, 36. I don't know which statute it was you were referring to, but it only applied to licensed providers?
Yeah, that would be 24.
Is it 24?
01. And that's in the definition of what quality assurance activities are. As for the related materials, as I mentioned earlier, NIH did not establish on the underlying record that those materials were protected. Like I said, the Dolan's Declaration didn't even address the related materials. I'd just like to conclude by saying that, you know, NIH has made some policy, public policy arguments about protecting this information to promote honest reporting and improving healthcare. But I think, as you know, Judge Bailey had just addressed, you know, with counsel, there's an equally important public policy at stake here, in that an injured person should not be deprived of his right to discovery, deprived of his right to discover purely factual information in a defendant's possession regarding his injury. And so for those reasons, respondent requests that the court deny relief. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Jankaitis.
Thank you, Your Honors. This is the first time that I'm hearing that quality assurance statutes don't apply. Northern Arizona Healthcare is the defendant, and very clearly a licensed healthcare provider in this case. And the statutes broadly define quality assurance information as any information submitted to an entity for quality assurance activities. That is what this report was, information submitted directly to the entity for the specific purpose of quality assurance. The policy says if it deals with patient safety, put it in the database, and then we will use it for quality assurance purposes. There are some things on here that counsel referenced, but mandatory in each time is to give it a harm significance classification and to put it on the just culture analysis tree, both of which, again, end in analysis of whether or not the systems are working, or there's some sort of systemic failure. My question for the court, which of course you don't have to answer because I'm here to answer your questions, is what else is Northern Arizona Healthcare supposed to do? The code says make a quality management program that identifies documents and evaluates incidents that occur on your property so that you can figure out how to improve patient safety. And so the hospital adopted a system that is consistent with PSQA and consistent with Title 36 and followed the instructions that it gave itself with the intent that's stated in the policy that it be confidential. Regarding the record,
But is it the intent of the statute to make purely factual information, an eyewitness account of the events, to make that privileged?
Well, I can tell you that there's no statute that says that a plaintiff has a public policy right to discover factual information in someone's possession when it's otherwise been designated confidential. So that doesn't answer your question directly, but it's a better point.
I'm struggling with John C. Lincoln's distinction between raw factual information and other information, and the former is not privileged.
The problem with John C. Lincoln is that all there was pure factual information, and it wasn't reported directly to the quality assurance purpose. For all these reasons, and as we said in our brief, we ask that you accept jurisdiction and reverse the trial court's order. Thanks.
Thank you. We will take this under advisement and issue our ruling in due course. We are adjourned.